Hello, my name is Stephen Bigelow, features writer with TechTarget Storage Media Group, and today I'm speaking with Tony Asaro, senior analyst for the Enterprise Strategy Group in Milford, Massachusetts. Tony focuses on storage systems, including SAN, NAS, content-addressed storage, and storage virtualization solutions. Tony, thanks so much for joining us today to discuss NAS.
Absolutely.
Tony, there are lots of questions when it comes to network-attached storage, understanding what it is, grappling with implementation issues, scaling, best practices are just a few topics of interest to our readers. So let's go through some of the most frequent questions that you encounter. And I think the best place to start is with some concepts. Why select NAS over other storage networking solutions such as iSCSI or Fibre Channel SANs?
Well, Stephen, like most answers that involve the data center, it depends, right? So one of the first things that should be considered is that NAS has file-level awareness, right? It understands files and file attributes. So let's start there. If you've got lots of file data, then NAS is something that you need to consider. And I also speak to customers that store database content on NAS. What they like about it is the ease of use, the data protection, and the manageability of NAS. So those are the elements that that people should look at. And what we're seeing is a big shift to unstructured data that's taking up more and more of the storage capacity out there, and that's file-based data, whether it's in documents, images, video, audio, those types of unstructured content types are growing and growing. So file-level storage and NAS storage is becoming a very important topic these days.
Tony, you used the term file-level awareness, file-level storage. Can you expand on why that idea is so important for our readers today?
Right. So NAS is file-level aware, and it's always been valuable. And because unstructured data and file data is consuming more and more capacity, it is becoming more of a priority. So NAS systems have their own file systems, right? And as such, these storage systems, these NAS systems, can act on the file data without any external applications to get to it, right? With SANs, you always need an external application to actually act on the data from a user's perspective, right? Our storage systems, whether they're SAN or NAS, are very smart. They can protect the data, they can copy data, they can transfer the data. But actually having a user-based action on that data requires an application with block storage or SAN storage. NAS storage, that's not true, right? A NAS system, you can, regardless of what operating system on, you can access that data, you can recover data, you can recover snapshots. So you can actually use the storage system itself to do functions to those files and to that data. So that's a very powerful difference between SAN and NAS. You also have great understanding of the metadata or the data about data, and that is becoming increasingly important as well. And we saw a lot of that importance in terms of how we handle compliance, write once, read many attributes, retention attributes, putting rules and policies on that data, but also just fundamentally protecting that data is easier too, creating logical snapshots. Certainly you can do that in a SAN environment, but you have greater levels of ease of use and logical control of those different files within the NAS system itself or any file system-based storage. So, and I'm specific in saying that because not NAS is a specific thing, and file-level awareness storage can be actually implemented within a storage system without the classic NAS. But what we're also seeing is universal search and indexing within NAS environments as well. And this is going to become increasingly important as my unstructured data stores keep growing and growing. So being able to actually do search on a large repository of file-based data is becoming more and more valuable. Those are some of the key elements that file-level awareness gives you.
Well, Tony, that certainly does sound valuable for our readers. And I guess the next question is, if it's so valuable, then why don't more people have NAS or deploy it in their organizations?
Well, that's a really good question. So let's ask some other questions to figure out the answer to that. How many NAS vendors are there out there, right? There's only a handful. Whereas there are lots and lots of SAN vendors out there, right? There's over 40. There's dozens of people who sell block-based storage. There's just a handful of people that sell NAS. And if you think about it, there's only really one NAS vendor out there that does over $1 billion in revenue in NAS-based products. So if you think about that, there's a community, an ecosystem, right, that is much more SAN-oriented out there than NAS-oriented. So there's not as much traction in the NAS world than there is in the SAN world. And I think that has a lot to do with it. With all of these SAN solutions out there and all of these players in SAN, you create a rising tide. The market just gets bigger and bigger. So there are more people who are adopting SAN because there are more people who are selling it. There are more options out there. There's more expertise out there. And it builds momentum. So NAS has actually been a smaller market because there's just been less players in it.
Tony, let me ask you an aside question or follow-up to that. Is price an issue?
I don't see a huge distinction. In fact, NAS could actually be cheaper than SAN in many cases, and especially before iSCSI came into the mix. NAS was really using the Ethernet and networking technologies, whereas SAN required all of this additional infrastructure. iSCSI is leveling out that playing field. I will give something else to SAN over NAS, which is SAN is highly interoperable, works in any environment, any application. So from that perspective, you have to think a little bit more about where you're going to use NAS versus where you're going to use SAN. I mentioned databases. You can run on NAS, but classically it is being run on SAN. NAS is smarter, right? It has that file level awareness. So there is a latency interjection because of that, and you don't get the blazing speed. So from SAN, you know, it's the fast performing solution, and it's a lower layer protocol, so it doesn't have as much latency in it. And so there's more appeal from a SAN perspective because it does support more applications and more environments than NAS do just from a basic perspective. For example, Microsoft doesn't support email on proprietary file systems, which is what NAS have. So people aren't going to implement email, one of the fundamental applications in any company or organization, with NAS because of that.
Tony, I think you had alluded a bit to this next question, but I'm hoping you can expand on it for us. Can you segment the NAS market for us? I mean, you did mention that there are a number of different NAS solutions and vendors, but they seem to address different markets.
Well, how much time do we have? There are a number of categories, right? And as I said before, it isn't just NAS systems, but also file system companies out there as well. But first, there's the mass market, right? The NAS for the mainstream. And this is for file storage and home directories and file sharing. And there's a mixture of operating systems, Unix, Linux, Windows, Novell. There are a lot of different environments out there. And there's also some database thrown in there as well. And this is probably, you know, where we see companies like NetApp and Microsoft and even EMC to a certain extent. That's where the bulk of where their business goes. But NAS is also being used, and we often refer to high-performance computing, but this is sort of a general moniker for a lot of different segmentations. Seismic research, right, which creates lots of big images. And this is becoming even more important now because with the price of oil, you can actually research and you can actually go into areas before and now that you couldn't before because of the price didn't justify it. But now the economics say, hey, let's search in more remote places. So that is driving the need for different kind of NAS solutions out there. There's satellite imagery, there's medical, there's engineering design, complex chip designs, multimedia with editing and rendering and even viewing. There's photographic images, audio, video, on and on. And the online world is also opening up whole new markets for NAS, because all of this data is unstructured data, which NAS is very well suited for. And these environments, you know, they typically need high performance, big file systems, often runs into hundreds of terabytes and even potentially petabytes of capacity requirements. And these systems are very closely aligned to the business, and that's why they need a level of invisibility, if you will, from an administrative and support perspective. And so that's why you'll see certain vendors targeting that, because they've really built their systems to meet that requirement. But another big need is in the area of nearline and archival. Right, so data loses its dynamism over time, right? It goes from being dynamic, being accessed all the time, to being persistent, where it doesn't change and it isn't very often accessed. And so these NAS systems are being used to store a lot of this persistent data. And these systems also need to be easy to manage. They have to be highly scalable because these systems can get very, very big. They have to be much lower cost than my Tier 1 storage. And I need to be able to do search and indexing, right? If I've got 500 terabytes of all of this data on a single system, then how do you make that data useful to you at all? And that's why search and indexing becomes very powerful as well. You know, I can, if you will, Google my storage system to get the data that I need quickly and precisely. And the key is precise, right? We need to be able to get what we want quickly. But in a sea of data that looks very similar, getting to that precision is the hard part.
Tony, virtualization has been definitely on the radar here with storage systems. And can you tell us a bit about NAS virtualization solutions? And we also see that termed sometimes as file area networks or FAN.
Right. Well, from a conceptual point of view, I love it. I love NAS virtualization and I love FAN. But I say conceptual because you always have to get into the product specifics. But it isn't really just an issue of NAS or FAN that I think is really important. The importance is that we need greater levels of virtualization throughout all of our storage infrastructure. What I like about NAS virtualization and file area networks, and I'll just refer to it as FAN just to make it easier to talk about, is that you get a higher level of intelligence, right? You get this ease of management and greater utilization of your physical storage assets, which improves usability. So what do I mean by that? Well, NAS and even SAN environments have done a great job of networking your host systems to your single storage systems, right? But the storage systems themselves aren't networked with one another, right? They are all individual systems. So really, if you think about it, and if you look at other networks, right, the whole point of other networks is so that everything's a peer, right? Everything gets to talk to everything else. But that isn't true in our storage universe, right? We are very focused on having all of these host systems accessing individual storage systems. So what FAN does is that it networks your network storage, right? It networks these individual devices so that you actually have common communication link between these devices. And that's where the power lies, right? I can move data between these systems for load balancing, for tiering of storage. I can replicate heterogeneously. I can create a federated view into all of these different systems, right, and make it easier now for me to access from any point. And also it makes it easier for me to manage all of these devices because now I'm not looking at individual systems per se. I'm actually looking at a network of devices that I can use in concert with one another. And that's where the power lies, right? So these are new concepts. It's an emerging area of technology, but ultimately this is where storage networking in general needs to go.
Tony, how about other trends? Can you discuss some other things that are going on or that impact network-attached storage?
Absolutely. As I said before, there's just tons of unstructured data. You know, I know the overused analogy of the iceberg, right? But really, it fits here. You know, the top of the iceberg is all of your transactional data, whereas and structured data and semi-structured data, whereas the bulk of the data is underneath the water. It's the unstructured data, and it's not visible often because it's not used very often. So, you know, moving that off of your large SAN-based systems onto NAS systems just makes a lot of sense from an end user's perspective. But clustered architectures, right? We're seeing companies, get great success having these clustered architectures, N-way architectures, where I can just scale systems as I need to, right? Just add more processing power, more memory, and have it all be more bandwidth, and have it all be a single system to view. Limitless file systems, right? Our leading file system guys, they've got 16 terabyte file systems, and that is a lot. But when you're starting to think about single files that could be 50 terabytes, 100 terabytes, just in of themselves, you need file systems that obviously are bigger than 16 terabytes, and that's the new reality. So we're seeing limitless file systems, petabyte size file systems and beyond. Writable snapshots, we very, very popular use of read-only snapshots, but writable snapshots, I think, is one of the most powerful trends in technology, that I can make lots and lots of virtual volumes, if you will, that I don't have to consume more capacity. And that's really important, especially in a world where we're trying to reduce footprint, we're trying to reduce consumption of power and cooling and things of that nature. Data deduplication, right? We've seen data deduplication in backup environments, but now we're beginning to see it happen in your primary environments as well, and we're seeing that being led in a NAS-based environment also. But data compression, we don't talk about that. Data compression isn't a new technology, but having it be applied to your primary, secondary storage systems is something that I think you're going to see much more. And oftentimes, people actually mix in data dedupe and data compression together. Search and indexing, which I mentioned before, and I think there's a lot of power in that. But another thing, too, that I think we're going to hear more and more is the consolidation of file and block services. And then beyond that, I think that we need to go beyond just the consolidation of those services, but actually have them cooperate with one another as well.
Tony, from everything that you've said about NAS, it seems to be a tremendous solution for a lot of users. Why not do everything with NAS instead of a SAN?
Hey, go ahead. I give you permission. Have a party. Use everything on NAS if you want. Well, email isn't supported, as I mentioned earlier. And high-end databases, most people use SAN storage because, as I said, you know, NAS works at a higher layer. It is more intelligent. And with that intelligence, right, there's always a price to pay for anything that's valuable. So there's a higher level of latency in there. So you're not going to get the high levels of performance that you would with a SAN. There's a lot of incumbency with SAN in there, and that with that incumbency becomes expertise, comes investment from the end user's perspective. It's what they know, it's the infrastructure they've implemented, so you know, you just can't turn from one to the other. And I believe that NAS is great for the persistent world. I think SAN is great for blazing fast transactional world, right? So I like the combination. But it's all based around best practices. I know companies that have an all NAS environment. Maybe they throw in a little iSCSI in there for email, but they have an all NAS environment, and they're putting it on high-end mission-critical databases, and it's working fine. So there is no absolute you know, one way to do something or other. I even know you can put your email on NAS if you want to. That's fine, right? Even though Microsoft doesn't necessarily support it, you can do it. You can be a rebel and go ahead and do that. It will work. So those are the things that you need to take a look at. It's all going to be about best practices. It's all going to be about what you want to do. But I like the idea of the merging of these technologies together. We're seeing vendors left and right and end users as a result implement both NAS and SAN together with best practices, you know, balancing file and database and email. It's still a single storage system, but it's serving up the protocol to the appropriate application. Well, that's a smart way to do it, right? The other thing is that, like I said, they need to work together more cooperatively, right? The future of that and the future of storage, I think, is going to be built on the cooperation of these different storage protocols.
And Tony, we spoke a little earlier about NAS virtualization, but what about server virtualization and NAS integration? How does all that relate?
Well, I think that's a great question, and it's a timely question, right? Because we're at a point where server virtualization is really becoming pervasive, right? I've seen very few technologies have the kind of impact that server virtualization is having on the marketplace, and I see no end in sight. You know, I go and do a lot of seminars, and I go and speak to a lot of end users, and I have never seen such a consistent response to server virtualization. You know, it's almost unanimous that everyone is adopting it, regardless of what geography, regardless of what size company they are. So it is a very important issue, and server virtualization actually drives people to take storage that otherwise was internal or direct attached and network it, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense to keep your storage inside a server with a bunch of virtual servers on it, right? The analogy I use, I mean, you lose a lot of the value. Analogy I use, like, it's having a TV and only watching DVDs, not having any network or cable access, right? You can get some value out of it, but you miss the core value. And so people are saying, well, wait, you know, before we had all of these Windows-based servers, these Intel-based servers, and you know, we didn't have them on the SAN, but now we're going to put everything on the SAN because we can get, you know, all the fluidity that these virtual servers give us. We can, you know, move images around to any server platform that we want. We can replicate them if we want. We can load balance. We can do upgrades. We can do all of these different things. But by putting those images onto the SAN or onto the NAS environment, so we are hearing more and more end users talk about implementing server virtualization with NAS. And if you're a NAS shop, it makes a ton of sense, right? So, you know, we're doing research on this now. We see the adoption of server virtualization with network storage. We've mostly been talking to people in a SAN environment with doing this, but we are getting more and more awareness around NAS and server virtualization. So I don't have the answers to that now, but we're doing a lot more research about what the implications are going to be with server virtualization and NAS storage.
Tony, you spoke about NAS integration, a higher level of integration with different storage protocols. When do you think this will happen?
Well, you know, honestly, maybe never. I mean, there are some vendors that do this today, but it's not widely adopted. And that's partly because it does require proprietary drivers. It's not transparent. And so we need to drive the standards, which, as you know, can take years in order to do. But if you see the value of this, right, of having these protocols work together, and I'm not talking about having a storage controller that supports both SAN and NAS. I'm talking about having file-level awareness, understanding different file attributes, being able to act on the data, but then, you know, moving data using SAN protocols, right? If you think about it, that's the best of both worlds, right? I can have file-level awareness, file-level intelligence, but if I get the performance of SAN, then I can now use it for any application in any environment, and I don't have to worry about, you know, any levels of latency that intelligence used to cost me. Now I can have that intelligence without the cost of performance, and that's why I like the amalgamation, if you will, of both SAN and NAS. But it is all proprietary right now, and so we have to drive the standards. So you're going to have to wait for that. Otherwise, you're going to have to use a proprietary solution. And if you're okay and if you feel that there's a lot of value in using that proprietary solution, then you can get it today. But if we want to make this more universal, then, yeah, we're going to have to push the whole standards process to make it happen.
And Tony, one aside question just to expand on this topic of integration a bit. The description of amalgamating NAS and SAN, is that something that's termed unified storage out in the industry?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's one of those things, you know, unified storage is, you know, is anything that you want it to be. And so we can refer to it as unified storage. I think it is a form of unification of storage. But I think that a lot of people right now are just talking about unification of storage, of having a storage controller, a storage system that does support multiple personalities, right? That does support iSCSI and Fibre Channel, that does support SIFS and NFS and all of these protocols into a single system. And that's right now what I think people are talking about in terms of unification. I believe we have to take that a step further, right? I think that we need to take it so that, you know, NAS protocols and SAN protocols actually work together, work with each other. There's kind of a handoff sort of system that says, hey, I need that file-level knowledge. But I know that moving it over a block infrastructure is going to be faster. And so I want to get the best of those both worlds. And today there's very few solutions that actually do that.
And Tony, this brings us all down to our final question today. What else should people consider when thinking about NAS? What other suggestions or advice would you offer?
Well, you know, I think we covered a lot of good stuff, and, you know, obviously on each one of those topics, I think that we can explore even more deeply. But really, I think that I want to talk to the SAN-centric folks out there, the ones that don't really have any NAS to speak of out there, while in fact they actually do, right? SAN environments have tons and tons of file data stored on their Tier 1 storage and on their secondary storage, even though they're all either Fibre Channel or iSCSI-based. But the idea is that they've got a bunch of file servers, right? So they've got all of these file servers, and those, for all intents and purposes, are actually NAS systems, right? They're just, you know, single file servers that are talking in the same protocols that NAS do. So the point is that, you know, you can consolidate those systems, and they probably are consolidating a lot of file servers through using virtual server technology. They can look at NAS solutions. They could look at NAS virtualization or FAN solutions in those environments too, which I don't think that they're even thinking about today. Right, those NAS and FAN solutions are going all after NAS environments, but they're not going after the file server environments, which is probably even got greater problems. But the notion is this. If all of this data is unstructured, if it's persistent data, you know, why are you keeping it on your most expensive spinning disks? Why are you keeping it on your million-dollar systems, your multi-million-dollar systems, if no one's accessing it? So move it all off to another tier, file-level knowledge, NAS-based, content-aware-based, you know, just a file system-based solution, and then you can grow these huge archives and sprinkle a little search and indexing, and it becomes useful to you. And we believe, and we're talking to a lot of end users that are actually doing this, have done this. We are seeing these archive stores growing to potentially petabytes over time, and this is happening very rapidly. And we believe that it's important to take a look at intelligent tiered environments. But that secondary tier, or that archival and nearline tier, those are the important things. You got to look at the attributes, right? You got to look at, you know, all the things that a file system-based, NAS-based solution can give you. And I think that, that's an important step to make. I talked to a lot of end users. Anywhere between 60 and 80% of their data is dormant. No one is accessing it 90 days after its creation. And yet, it's still being backed up every night, and it still has high levels of protection policies on it, and it's consuming more and more of your capacity, and it's the most expensive capacity that you have. So we think this is an important initiative that people need to undertake. And again, when I go out and talk to end users, very few of them are doing it in any major or important way. So that's just some food for thought to end with.
Well, Tony, I think that wraps it up for today's question and answer session. I want to thank our NAS expert and frequent search storage contributor, Tony Asaro, for sharing his insights and expertise with us today. Tony, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm Stephen Bigelow, features writer for TechTarget's Storage Media Group, and you can learn more about network-attached storage and other storage concepts at www.searchstorage.com.